What is up, everyone? Welcome back to a special episode of Fancast Movies Podcast. We're a podcast about movies. My name is Eric Davis, and joining me this week is Jason Garacio, who is a contributor to Movies.com, and he had a few interviews up during the Sundance Film Festival, and that's what we're going to be talking about today, the 2014 Sundance Film Festival, our favorite movies, our impression of this year's festival, favorite performances, and all that jazz, so this way you know what to look forward to if you haven't really been paying attention to the coverage, or if you have. We're going to tell you which movies were the best ones and which ones you need to keep an eye out for. What's up, Jason?
What's up, Eric? Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. I mean, you and I, we sat next to each other for a bunch of movies during this year's festival. So I want to ask you, let's start off, what were your impressions of this year? Do you think it was a good year? You think it was better than last year? Not as good as last year? What do you think?
I think it was a very strong year. Every year you always go and, you know, there are ones on paper that you just kind of highlight and you know, whether because it has distribution already, that, you know, those are the ones that, you know, are probably going to make a big impact. So the idea is always to kind of go in looking for those ones that are kind of under the radar or maybe haven't gotten a lot of attention yet that will more than likely blow up while you're there. You know, a good example last year was like Escape from Tomorrow. No one really knew much about it. And then once you're at the festival, it kind of just blew up. Also like Beasts of the Southern Wild, that kind of thing. This year, you know, I have to say, almost everything I saw, I really, really enjoyed. If it wasn't good, it was great. I mean, I think this is definitely a very strong Sundance.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed this year more than I did last year. I thought some terrific films, a variety.
Yeah.
I think a lot more variety than last year. Last year, I felt like the films that came out were very heavy coming-of-age stories. That was a heavy theme last year. And we got Fruitvale, which won, which was a great film. But this year, a great variety. There are films that you can love on pure ambition. There are films that you can love because they were just ridiculously action-packed and exciting. There are films that you love because of their concept. There's just all different types of reasons why you love this year's slate, and that's what I like. So let's talk about our favorites. I think let's do top three.
Yeah.
And then when we mention these movies, we'll also tell you whether or not they did get distribution and if you can see them in theaters this year or if they're still awaiting distribution. So let's start with you. Give me your number three.
I'm going to do three. I can't off the top of my head say one, two, or three, to be honest with you. I mean, for all these, I really like – I mean, they're all great in kind of different ways. I will say kind of right off the top, though, for me and I think this is kind of with everybody who's kind of was in press there, is Boyhood was just really one for all of us that, you know, you've been hearing about for years. You've been wanting to know what is this film that Linklater is making, and really to see it, it's just this hugely ambitious work that is just so powerful. You know, he wanted to make a film about childhood and he really does it. It's close to 3 hours long. And it's something that IFC Films has been backing for years now. It stars Patricia Arquette, Ethan Hawke, and has great performances. One of the daughter in the film is Linklater's real daughter. And then the kid who we kind of follow from, I guess, like 7 or 8 up until when they graduate high school, you just see this evolution. They shot, you know, a couple of, you know, a week or so once a year, you just see this evolution of the kids and the family that we're following. And it was just, I mean, it's one of the most ambitious films I think we can say that we've seen in a long while. And just on top of that, the fact that it was shot on 35mm and that its film is dying. I mean, it's just a fact. I mean, Paramount, you know, they've said that the last movie on film they're going to make is the last Anchorman film. So, I mean, it's really going to be one of those films that you have to landmark as being just a special work because you're not going to see something like this ever again.
Yeah, no. And what we're alluding to, in case you're not familiar with Boyhood, is the fact that Richard Linklater, who directed Dazed and Confused, you know him from that. He also did the Before movies, Before Sunrise, Sunset, and Midnight, shot this movie over the course of 12 years. which I don't know if I've ever really seen anything like this before. And like Jason just said, we're never going to see something like this again, because now that film is dying and that you can't shoot on film, you can't start something like this now, say, on digital, because in 12 years from now, technology is going to advance so much that your picture is going to look completely different every year that you shoot. Linkletter, because he shot on film, it all looks the same. So when the stuff that he shot in 2002 looks exactly like the stuff he shot in 2013. And so there's just this really awesome natural progression. And yeah, like you said, watching the evolution of characters. I mean, whenever we see films, and we're used to seeing films, when they transition to different time periods, either actors are wearing makeup or they're getting different people to play different roles, younger and older versions. These are all the same people throughout the entire film for 12 years. And just watching these kids grow up as characters, but then also physically grow up in front of your eyes, just kind of is sort of mind-boggling, you know?
And also just the dedication to do this. I mean, you know, Richard Linklater has worked with Ethan Hawke many times. They have an incredible relationship. But just to really dig down and say, we're going to go through this. We're going to see it the whole way. For that amount of time, with what everybody's schedules must be like, I mean, it's really an incredible piece of work.
Yeah, you know, and I definitely think it's the most ambitious film to premiere at Sundance since Beasts of the Southern Wild, maybe one of the most ambitious films ever made. And I think he still is probably going to tinker with it. From what we gathered, they literally had just finished a couple of days before the film premiered at Sundance. I can see it also playing South by Southwest. I imagine.
Definitely. I mean, almost all of it was shot in Austin. Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be tweaks to it. And also, let's just say too that I think the soundtrack, you know, the music for this film is going to be great. You know, he gave some hints and he played some tracks. He admitted that none of this had been cleared yet when just regards to music. But I think also on top of that, and just also from we know from his films, that the music is going to be incredible. Also, it's going to be a really just a real plethora of films from over the decades that I think that's going to be also an amazing thing to see how he hones that.
Yeah, people comparing it to a time capsule. And that's what it feels like you're watching, because, you know, he was very aware of when he was shooting each scene in each year to color the background with cultural things that were happening at that time. So you have the little kid playing, you know, his Game Boy, his video, you know, you have the kids on a really
Oregon
early
Trail. He was playing Oregon Trail. I was like, holy cow.
Exactly. They're on a very early Macintosh computer, and you know, and then at the end they're on iPhones. And so there's this really, so as you're watching it, you're sort of reliving your own experiences over the last 12 years. And so that's why the film just connects with you in all kinds of different ways, and it blew everybody away. So I imagine it will be in awards consideration next year, just on pure ambition alone. Yeah. I don't know how you don't recognize this film in some capacity. So it'll be interesting, and keep an eye out. We don't have a release date yet. If I was guessing, I would say IFC is going to drop this during award season and see what happens. So
it'd be crazy not to.
Yeah, so keep an eye out. Next film, I'm going to go with Boyhood is one of mine that I was going to say. So I'm also going to say Whiplash. This is a film that was the opening night film, probably the best opening night film, or at least the most entertaining opening night film that I've seen in a long time at Sundance. And this is a film that even to the very end of the festival, right before I left, I would hear people on the shuttles talking, what's your favorite film? And almost always, I think, when I heard somebody ask somebody else this question, Whiplash was a film that was mentioned. This is a movie that stars Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons. It takes place at a prestigious music school in New York City, and Miles Teller is a new student who wants to be one of the great drummers of all time. And J.K. Simmons plays a Full Metal Jacket type instructor who screams and yells and belittles his students in an attempt to get them to discover their greatness and to to completely break them down, because that's his philosophy. He feels like if you can completely break a person, that is when they find their true greatness. And it's controversial, and a lot of that controversy plays out in the movie. But there's an incredible energy in the film. The way they shoot the scenes, I think the biggest thing to come out of this movie will be its director. Yeah. Who is a bit of I think Jason Reitman. He's kind of under Jason Reitman's wing. Jason Reitman produced the film, and I can see this as sort of Jason Reitman introducing this kid as saying, you know, watch out for him. And the direction is brilliant. It ends on a note that is so high energy that even if the film isn't all completely together for you, you walk out, because of the way it ends, you walk out thinking maybe it's a better movie than it actually was. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. And just to note that, you know, the director Damien Chazelle, some indie fans out there might remember his film Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench, which came out in 2009. You know, didn't get, you know, very wide release at all, but you know, it's you can tell this is a guy that just has an appreciation for music. You know, Guy and Madeline was very much kind of like an indie musical, a lot of music, a lot of story told around performance and around just musical interludes. And you know, and you can just see the growth of this filmmaker. You know, I'd be shocked if we're not talking about Miles Teller, J.K. Simmons in the acting awards when it comes to the end of the festival. I think both of them are amazing in the film. And I agree with you, Eric. It's definitely one of the best opening night films of Sundance that I've seen in a long while. The power of this film, and just, again, the appreciation of music, which, you know, many filmmakers do this. Many filmmakers are huge fans of music, but I think Damien really shows something here that unlocks music as storytelling that we haven't seen in a while. And you're right. I mean, everybody, you know, it's very rare that an opening night film at any festival gets talked about by the end of the festival. But that's how this film is going. It just keeps building and building.
Yeah, great jazz music. If you're a fan of jazz, you'll find a lot to enjoy in the film. And there's just, yeah, it's just a really entertaining movie. Sony Pictures picked it up, I believe, right?
I think it's Sony Classics.
Oh, yeah. Sony Classics. Okay, so it'll come out this year. I don't know when. Maybe they'll drop it in the fall for awards consideration. I could see maybe J.K. Simmons being a long shot for consideration, but I hate even talking about that kind of stuff right now because it's so early and we haven't even gotten through the Oscars last year. But we'll see, and we will let you know when it does have a release date. It does have distribution, so expect it later this year. Give me another title that's one of your favorites.
You know, The Babadook, which was in the Midnight category, let me say this, is so good that because it's in the Midnight category, it gives it a peg down for probably most people out there. But I assure you, it's certainly a genre film. It definitely has that thing of, you know, a single mother with a kid going through problems, and this kind of mythical figure comes in and is basically the boogeyman and, you know, makes their lives a living hell. But the performance of the lead actress, the styling of the film, it's an Australian film by this filmmaker Jennifer Kent, and you know, I just was completely sucked into this film from kind of like the first 5 minutes. And I mean, it's one of those films that I could see if it got into the right hands, you would remake this as an American version with, you know, kind of like a lead female actress kind of going all for it, because by the end of this movie, the woman goes insane to a point of like The Shining, like Jack Nicholson is Shining. It's that intense. But there's a playfulness to it that doesn't make it go overboard. And it's a film I just really, really enjoyed. And I hope it takes off.
That's awesome. I did not see Babadook. Has it been picked up?
I don't believe so. And I don't know if they already have a foreign pickup already, because, you know, it is Australian. So I don't know what their idea was going into this. I'm sure they're looking for a U.S. distributor. But I mean, it's definitely one that I've been preaching a lot about since, you know, as the festival's going on, and it seems like it's been building some traction. But Whether it be kind of one of those hidden gems that just comes out through a small distributor later, it's a fantastic film.
You picked a midnight movie. I'm going to pick a midnight movie. The Guest. The Guest is one of my favorite films that I've seen. This is a film that was directed by Adam Wingard, written by Simon Barrett. These are the guys that did Your Next. They also participated in the two VHS movies. And this is a team that, you know, also I think encompasses producer Keith Candler as well, Jessica Wu. I think that it's just an entire team that make these really fun movies that not only deconstruct genres, but they also kind of are throwbacks. Specifically, The Guest is a throwback to an amalgamation of different 80s movies and characters that we've seen before. And what I love about these two is that right now, specifically, and after The Guest, I can see them maybe getting onto a Hollywood movie and just going in that direction. But right now, between Your Next and The Guest, they're making movies that they want to make that geek them out on their terms. And I don't know how mainstream and accessible they are, but they're really entertaining the people who kind of get their style. Basically, what The Guest is about is a family who lost their son in the military. And one day, a stranger shows up on their door, and he says, "Okay, I'm one of your son's best friends." And right before he died, he told me that he wanted me to come and deliver a message for him, that he loved all of you. And this is a mom and a dad and a brother and a sister. And he's sort of a very warm soldier, but there's something off about him. And he comes into their home and they welcome him in. And he, you know, okay, stay a couple of days until you get on your feet. He does so. And then the film sort of unravels from there. It's either is he going to stay a couple of days until he gets on his feet, or is he going to stay a couple of days until everyone around him is dead? And sort of what that mystery is and who this guy is plays out across the film, which is set at Halloween. And I could feel this even being a new Halloween classic, and it's a different spin on the Halloween movie. What did you think? Did you see it?
I did see it. I loved it. I mean, I like this more than Your Guest in regards of just the playfulness to it. It's so much fun. And I think anybody who's an Adam Wingard fan is just going to run to see this film because, but like you said, the homage to 80s. I mean, and just think about it. There's no other film that I would want Lance Riddick to be in. Lance Riddick from The Wire. I mean, he epitomizes what should be in an Adam Wingard movie just from the face and the actions. It's a lot more action heavy than Your Next. I think that was the intention. And I completely agree. I mean, I really think Adam Wingard, Simon Barrett, their producers, if they aren't already talking about doing a franchise movie or doing something in Hollywood, Hollywood's crazy to not get these guys onto something, because I would love to see their take on something that Hollywood throws at them.
Yeah, I would too, you know, and it's not going to be completely on their terms, I think, like these two movies have been. And so there'll be different movies. But it's just really fun to watch, you know, John Carpenter, The Terminator, there's all sorts of films from coming of age movies, you know, every little 80s trope and character, I feel like, has a place in this movie. And it's just it loves the hell out of that time period.
And I didn't know anything about Dan Stevens, who's, I guess, best known from Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
But he was fantastic in the film.
He's great.
And he's a perfect character for that. And I guess that's a great thing that maybe a lot of people don't know who he is who are going to go in to see this movie, because I think he's just the perfect character where you don't really have much backstory in the regards of who the actor is, that he just fits perfectly right into what Adam wanted this character to be.
Exactly. And we're keeping the film mysterious for a reason, because it's fun to discover how exactly it unfolds. So give me another movie.
You know, there's so many, but I guess my last one, because I honestly really like so many films. Eric, I hope I don't take one of your other ones, because I really enjoyed The Battered Bastards of Baseball.
Okay.
We
both saw that. Really liked it.
Yeah, one just because, you know, it captures baseball in a sense that, you know, you don't really see that much. And then I'm not talking like a Ken Burns type documentary on baseball. This is, and I think you said in your review, Eric, this is kind of like the real life major league. Mm-hmm. In regards to just, you have this team out in Portland, owned by Bing Russell, who's Kurt Russell's dad, is an independent baseball team that's playing double-A teams from and single-A teams from established Major League Baseball teams. And they're a ragtag bunch. You know, Bing just had an open tryout, got these guys together, you know, pays them out of his pocket, and they kick butt. You know, they win. You know, the first game they ever played, the guy threw a no-hitter, you know, on their team. I mean, it's stories that you would never think were true, and they are. The Way brothers, Chapman and McLean Way, this is their first film.
This is a grandfather, too.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think they do an incredible mixture of interviews and archival footage. Todd Field, the director of In the Bedroom, he was the bat boy on the team, so he has a ton of insights. The catcher on the team created Big League Chew. I mean, there are these stories that you would just never think were even possible. Yeah. So, I think it's definitely primed and ready to be remade into a narrative film. But before that, I definitely highly recommend going see this film. I'd be shocked if it doesn't get picked up by the end of the festival. I think it's just a fun documentary, especially if you're a baseball fan.
Yeah, it's just one of these great baseball stories that's just never been told. And so not only do you get this great story, but you get this really awesome look at Kurt Russell and his family. Like, I did not know all of this about Kurt Russell and that the fact that he was a minor league baseball player and that his father, you know, one of the craziest things about this movie is they tell you right off the bat early in the movie that Bing Russell, this is Kurt Russell's father, he was somehow had a chance encounter with Lefty Gomez, pitcher for the Yankees way back in the day, and that somehow turned into him becoming this unofficial mascot for the Yankees where they would invite him into the clubhouse and hang out on the field, and he's got pictures from his personal little library of Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle and just as like hanging out with like the great Yankees of all time, which I think a lot of that sort of fueled his education in baseball. And it was just really amazing hearing all about this. And Kurt Russell spoke is in the documentary throughout and speaks at length about his father and kind of coming up. And Kurt Russell also played for this team, this Portland Mavericks team. And yeah, you know, Bad News Bears, Major League, these are the films that come to mind. But this is a real life story. And like Jason said, can totally see it being adapted into a narrative. Some people might be like, oh, well, isn't it just Major League? Yeah, but Major League was way. This is a real story.
Yeah, it's real stories, and I think would be told completely different than Major League. And I love Major League, and no way am I saying there should be another one out there. I'm, you know, very usually against any documentary becoming there, but I think this story is just so perfect to be retold. And another just really funny insight before we move on is just that Bing was so crazy about baseball. You know, he would have these kind of questionnaires about the game that he would pass on to Kurt, and also he had Kurt in instructional videos about the game. Kurt, you know, kind of doing grounders and throwing double plays and stuff. So just to see this other side of an iconic actor that we know just from incredible films that had this kind of youth is amazing to see.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. And to see that both Bing and Kurt kind of had the same path. Bing began as a baseball player and then segued into a character actor in Hollywood for years. Kurt Russell called him a plumber actor because he just constantly worked in hundreds of roles, but with really no notoriety. Nobody really ever knew him. He was always kind of in the background. And then Kurt did the same. He started as a minor league baseball player and segued into Hollywood. So just a fascinating story. Really, really check it out. Battered Bastards of Baseball. I don't know if – has this been picked up or was it –
No. Yeah. I think – but, I mean, it's been hot since it premiered. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact that a lot of distributors have their eye on it. So
yeah, it could be a good 30 for 30 as well, ESPN. And I could see somebody like that picking it up. Okay, so last film, I will put it out here. I really liked, and I'm not, this isn't going to be the movie, but I did really like Zach Braff's Wish I Was Here. I am one of the people, it is a divisive movie. Some people think it's a little bit hokey and plays to the emotions, but I am a romantic, and that movie just really spoke to me in a lot of ways, and I was one of the ones tearing up at the end of that. So I do like that a lot, and I do recommend it. But I am going to go with a movie called What We Do in the Shadows. I can't even mention the movie's title without laughing. That's how much I laugh. This is the funniest movie that I saw at Sundance. What We Do in the Shadows. It's a spoof movie, which is one of the things I love about it, is because these days we don't get any quality spoof movies. The Hollywood's version of the spoof movie these days is Vampires Suck and the Starving Games, and just these really simple-minded spoof movies that I don't even think understand what the spoof movie is. And in order to talk about the spoof movie and a great spoof movie, we got to go back decades now. We got to go back to Airplane and Naked Gun and Hot Shots. That's where we got to go these days when we talk about spoof movie, because that's how there aren't any good ones. This is a fantastic one. It comes to you from Jermaine Clement and Taiki Waititi. I said that name right. I'm not sure. They did Eagle vs. Shark. They were in Flight of the Conchords. And if you know Jermaine Clement and you like his sort of humor, then you will love this movie. It basically follows, it's a mockumentary that follows a group of vampires in New Zealand and sort of throughout their daily lives. And literally every single vampire trope vampire lore is touched upon in this movie. And even when you think that their concept is beginning to reach its final legs, they continually add new elements to it. There's from a rivalry that they have with a pack of werewolves to one new vampire who's still hanging out with his human best friend, who he brings into the clan. And it just, I laughed and laughed and laughed when I was watching this movie. It is so funny, and I really hope, I don't even know if this has been picked up yet.
Not that I've heard, but do you think this is too niche, or do you think this is something that a bigger distributor, like, you know, indie distributor would pick up?
I think it's definitely more accessible than Eagle vs. Shark. I do not think it's too niche, but I do, at the same time, I do not think it's completely mainstream. But it is a film that when you do see it, and you will, I definitely think it should get a theatrical distribution. If not, it'll be on VOD. Yeah. But you will really, especially if you like vampires and vampire movies, you will love this film. You will just love everything about it. There's so much to like about it. And so, What We Do in the Shadows is my last one. We have about 2 minutes. Tell me the best performance.
Best performance for me. You know what? There's so many, but I think, you know, Michael Pitt in I, Origins, I thought was just great.
Wow.
For one thing, we haven't seen him in a while. We haven't seen him since Boardwalk Empire, and I just love everything he does. And I think in this film in particular, you know, he plays a scientist whose particular focus is on the eye. For one thing, I think it's just an incredible story, and it's one that takes a little while to go along with. It's directed by Mike Cahill, who you'll remember did Another Earth. So there's a lot of science into it. But I think his performance is what makes the film keep going. And by the end, it's just a beautiful love story. And I'm glad to see him. And he's going to be doing more stuff. He's got like 3 other films in the can. So we're going to see a lot more of him.
Awesome. Yeah. I liked I, Origins. That Fox Searchlight picked that up. Yep. And it was it's one of those movies that kind of gives you a lot to think about.
Definitely.
So I really like that. For me, best performance. Oh God, you know, I should have probably had this in my head beforehand. But I'm going to go with J.K. Simmons. I really liked his performance in Whiplash. I thought he was pretty incredible. You know, he plays this character who's screaming and yelling at these kids, and you don't like him for it, but you know that he's doing it because he's trying to shape them in a certain way. And it's right on that line of, like, you know, and he does some pretty nasty things in this film to these kids. And you're like, dude, you are just vicious. But at the same time, you're watching it, and as vicious as you think he is and as wrong as you think he is, you kind of see why he's doing it in a sick way. And you see that in his performance too, which I really enjoy, because he can flip it in an instant and be this really charming guy who is really good and really nice. But then he flips it again, and he's just this sick son of a bitch. And so I really like that performance. I think it's great. I also really enjoyed Patricia Arquette's performance in Boyhood. And so that's that. So we'll wrap it up. Great year at the 2014 Sundance Film Festival. We'll try to get a lot of these movies in a wrap-up post so you can read more about them and watch trailers if they're available. And we'll, of course, let you know when they arrive in theaters on a future episode of this podcast. Jason Garacio, thank you very much.
Yeah, Eric, it was fun. Thanks.
For joining me. And we'll do it again next year, hopefully.
Definitely.
All right. And take care and enjoy your weekend at the movies.